So let's begin in Genesis chapter number 4. Genesis chapter 4 and verse number 1. And Adam knew Eve his wife, and she conceived and bare Cain, and said, I have gotten a man from the Lord. And she again bare his brother Abel, and Abel was a keeper of sheep, but Cain was a tiller of the ground. And obviously there's a lot of time that has passed here. We have the birth of two children to the adulthood of two children in a couple of verses. And in process of time it came to pass that Cain brought of the fruit of the ground an offering unto the Lord. And Abel he also brought of the firstlings of his flock and of the fat thereof. And the Lord had respect unto Abel and to his offering, but unto Cain and to his offering he had not respect, and Cain was very wroth, and his countenance fell. And I'm not going to read any further than that right now. But, okay, let's just kind of survey the landscape, so to speak, from an Old Testament perspective. From virtually the very beginning, we have a situation in which people are making offerings to God. Both Cain and Abel brought something to God. Abel's was, of course, accepted, and Cain's was not accepted. What is the dilemma? What is the dilemma? It isn't until you get to Hebrews chapter 11, okay? And I just want to be careful because we come to this, all right? And sometimes we try to make what I think are all kinds of artificial distinction and impositions about the nature of what they offered. Okay, because we have two men in what we would call two occupations. One is a farmer and one is a shepherd. But I would point out, I would argue that the New Testament is very helpful to us. And explain to us that it is not the substance of what they brought that constitutes the problem. Okay, I mean, it's not that one man brought something that was insufficient or inadequate. Because when we get into the Old Testament, both types of sacrifices are totally acceptable to God. There are animal offerings and there are agricultural offerings. So God is not happy that one brought a sheep and unhappy that one brought a tomato. The problem is deeper than that, and the problem is identified for us in Hebrews chapter 11 and verse number 4. Of course, in verses 1 through 3, you have both the definition and the exaltation of faith. Right? I mean, what is faith? This is what's going on here. Faith is the substance of things hoped for, the evidence of things not seen. And I don't want to get too far off track here, but the word substance is a really important word. It is a word that describes the what we might call the foundation or the undergirding of a thing. And it really becomes an important concept when we talk about the nature of Christ, who is both God and man. This is the foundational concept of Jesus Christ. He is 100% God. He is 100% man. Verse number 4. By faith Abel offered unto God a more excellent sacrifice than Cain, by which he obtained witness that he was righteous, God testifying of his gifts, and by it he being dead yet speaketh. What is the issue? I think that Hebrews is being very clear here that the issue is not an issue of substance, it is an issue of faith. Now, to me, this is particularly fascinating because here is a man, right? When you read the rest of the story, here is a man who is in a conversation with God himself. In other words, to Cain, there is no distancing himself from God by virtue of time or by virtue of book, like people would argue, well, you know, that's a Bible and it's in a very old book and the Old Testament was a long time ago and yada, yada, yada. Right? God is talking directly to Cain. Cain is talking directly to God. But there is more going on here than just simply an intellectual conversation and a mechanical offering. What Cain is lacking is not the quality of his gift, but faith when he brings his gift to God. And without faith, Hebrews 11:6, it is impossible to please God, for he must believe that he is. All right? So now, off on a little bit of a tangent. Is failure to believe in God's existence where Cain's faith goes bad? Does Cain believe in God's existence? Yes. Right? He's talking to God. So the faith and the failure must be at some other level. And of course, we understand from John's gospel that Cain was of the wicked one. And we also know, by the way, that the way that Cain dispatched Abel was to cut his throat. That's what John explains to us. Okay? Took a knife and murdered his brother. He was of the wicked one. So, whatever the deficiency was in the substance of Cain's offering, the root problem was his lack of faith. So, right out of the gate, folks, okay? I mean, I'm a New Testament pastor, and I'm going to argue that people ought to give. And I believe people ought to give. And I have jokingly said that God is, and not this is not a joke, I have said God is mostly concerned about the condition of your heart. From my own standpoint as the pastor, I personally do not care if you follow the offering plate down the aisle, weeping after your money as it gets away from you. I could not care less. That money is going in the bank and we're going to use it. And your heart really is, you know, to that extent, an issue between you and God. But right from the very beginning, we are introduced to the concept that merely doing things repetitively, mechanically, mean nothing to God. Cain brought the offering. Here it is. Here's what you wanted. Here's what you get. And God converses with Cain about that. And the issue is one of faith. So we never want to think that somehow Old Testament people, because we sometimes do this, and we're actually going to talk about it this morning, we tend to create a great gulf between the Old Testament and the New Testament that does not exist biblically. That was then, and that were those people, and you know that was great for them, but we're different, and there's no difference there. God expected heart interaction, heartfelt obedience, faith, even at that early point in human history. Okay? So Cain and Abel both brought offerings. And let's just talk about the word offering. That word offering is used over 200 times in the Old Testament. When it refers to giving something to God, our King James Bibles call it almost always an offering. Once in a while, they will call it an oblation or a sacrifice. But almost always it is translated an offering. It is an offering. But that word also has, and I'm spinning it now for our contemporary ears, that word has a secular use as well. Same Hebrew word. So in your King James Bible, if you take a gift of gold or silver or grain or an animal and you give it to God, we're going to call it an offering. And if you take gold or silver or grain or an animal and you give it to another human being, it is called a gift. Or it is called a present. For instance, Genesis chapter 32 and verse number 18. This is just one of several examples like that. Then thou shalt say, they be thy servant Jacob's. It is a present sent unto my lord Esau. And behold, also he is behind us. It is the same Hebrew word. There's no way to distinguish it. And I'm going through all that because we want to make sure that we understand what we're talking about here. We are talking about giving a gift to God. This is what was happening in the Old Testament. That people were giving something. Something was traded over. Something was exchanged. One thing for another. So, because again, lots of times when people have these kinds of conversations, they immediately go back to the law of Moses. But there are thousands and thousands and thousands. Be careful here. How many thousands? Right? Moses is, what, 2,500 B.C.? 2,000 B.C.? 1,500 B.C.? Moses about 1,500 B.C., right? You got a lot of time before that. Abraham, 2,500 B.C. That's what I meant to ask. Abraham's about 2,500 B.C. You got people giving gifts. You go back into the Garden of Eden. You have people giving God gifts. We're going to point this out, but the law of Moses didn't introduce the idea. The law of Moses simply regulated the idea. So people offered sacrifices prior to the law. In Genesis 31:54, Jacob offered a sacrifice. There's no law. There's no Ten Commandments. Right, this was one of the, when I started to do this reading, and I don't remember exactly where I read it somewhere online, but a guy made the observation that among ancient peoples, there were two bedrock convictions of every culture. One was that there were gods, of some sort, and number two, that men related to those gods by offering them things. So wherever culture you went into, you find people, and this is one of the real issues that we moderns have with dealing with the Bible is, we have, and I mean no insult to us, as Americans, as Westerners, we have a very secular mindset. We do not see the world in religious terms. You sit down and explain to your unbelieving coworker that for all of his talk about science, what he really is an idolater, and you're going to find yourself stonewalled because he doesn't believe he's religious. And we don't generally think of, right? I mean, this eclipse has dominated the news. Like, this is the only eclipse that has ever happened in the history of the world, and there will never be another one, and you better get your souvenir tomorrow, buddy, or it's all over with. Nobody has in any way correlated this to God in anything that I've read or heard. In a good way or a bad way. This is a testimony to the glory of God. This is a part of His creation. This is a preview of something that He said when He created the sun and the moon, that they will be for signs. Right? Because we're just thoroughly secular. And when we talk about it, and I'm not trying to be critical or beat anybody up. I'm just saying we don't view the world through religious eyes. But when you go back into the Old Testament, folks, that's the only way they knew to relate to the world. There was some deity doing everything that was going on. They didn't. If you'd talk to them about microbiology and DNA and cancer cells and natural disasters, they would have just thought that we're crazy. So so sacrifices are as old as mankind. Genesis 31, Jacob offered one. Genesis 46, we have the offering of a sacrifice. Moses asked Pharaoh to let the Jews go so they could sacrifice. This is Exodus 3:18 and Exodus 5:3. Let my people go, that we can go in the wilderness and offer a sacrifice to our God. So when we start to talk about things, okay, and we start to talk about offering, and as New Testament people, we go, well, under the law, well, this is true, but what the law was doing was regulating something that was already in existence, not imposing it. People have related to God by giving Him gifts from the beginning of time. And I'm going to argue that that hasn't changed, right? That nothing in the New Testament undoes that fundamental concept. Under the law now, we're going to start to regulate it, to codify it. So there was the tithe. Deuteronomy chapter 14. And I'm going to kind of throw this out. I haven't decided yet what to do. I'm going to leave this to your input. If you think it's worthwhile, tell me. And if you think it would not be worthwhile, tell me. But the Jewish tithe was not as simplified as we tend to think that it is. Deuteronomy 14, 22. Okay, there's the tithe. Thou shalt truly tithe all the increase of thy seed that the field bringeth forth year by year. I'm going to stop there. We're going to come back and look at it because this is part of a whole body. But thou shalt, our King James Version says truly tithe. The point is honestly tithe. Okay, none of this play dumb kind of stuff that we're so good at doing. But truly do it. Do it truthfully. Numbers chapter 18. And verse number 26. Verse number 25, the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, thus speak unto the Levites, and say unto them, when ye take of the children of Israel the tithes, which I have given you from them for your inheritance, then ye shall offer up an heave offering of it for the Lord, even a tenth part of the tithe. So, when the Levites collected the tithes, because that was part of their responsibility, then they turned around and offered a tithe of the tithe to the Lord in a heave offering. And we talked a little bit about this last week. Heave offering, sometimes translated wave offering. The idea is not that you're throwing something up in the air like it's a gigantic juggling act, but you are exalting this, you are lifting this offering up to God. There is a physical dimension to this. We take this animal and we lift it up in expression and we say, God, this is yours. That's the heave offering. Or the wave offering. And this was something that the Levites were to do. Leviticus chapter 27. Leviticus 27 and verse number 30. And all the tithe of the land, whether of the seed of the land or of the fruit of the tree, is the Lord's. It is holy unto the Lord. And if a man will at all redeem aught of its tithes. Okay? Now what does redemption refer to? What is the concept of redemption? I know it's a part of salvation, but what is it? What is its component in salvation? What is redemption? It is buying back. Okay, so here is right because we're dealing with a legality. Okay, the tithe is the Lord's. Now, if you would like to buy that tithe back under the law of Moses, if you want to redeem your tithe, then here's the provision. Okay? If a man will at all redeem aught of his tithes, he shall add the fifth part thereof. So, if you say to God, I owe you 10%. Well, let's just pick a number. I owe you $100. But I want to hold on to that $100 for now. God says, you can do that. You owe me $120. That's the price of redemption. You can do it. But there's a 20% premium for doing it. See, that's a regulation. The tithe is the Lord's. It belongs to Him. Well, I need to use it for a while. 20%. So the 100 that you owed last week is 120 when you pay it next week. There's part of the code. Okay? Verse number 32. And concerning the tithe of the herd, or the flock. One of the things I read, a guy, he was doing this and he said, you know, well, here's the thing on the tithe. It was only crops, you know, because it was an agricultural world. Evidently, Leviticus 27:32 escaped him. Concerning the tithe of the herd or of the flock, even of whatsoever passeth under the rod, the tenth shall be holy unto the Lord. He shall not search whether it be good or bad, neither shall he change it. And if he change it at all, then both it and the change thereof shall be holy. It shall not be redeemed. These are the commandments which the Lord commanded Moses for the children of Israel in Mount Sinai. All right, so under the law of Moses, Leviticus 27, we have these regulations. Everybody is going to pay the tithe. Everybody is going to tithe no matter how much money they have. This is a non-discriminatory offering. Okay? And I'm going to put it up here, and I'm, you know, so I hope nobody just looks at the notes. But the tithe is the most mechanical of offerings, if I can put it that way. In other words, did you notice what God said there? Now, so we've got this kind of counting system called the rod. And quite how it exactly works, I don't know. All right? I'm assuming, since Numbers 18 is pretty clear, that the gathering of the tithe belongs to the tribe of Levi. That we have an assembly, right? And here we come, and I bring my 100 sheep into the pen. And the Levite is there, and it's time to pay the tithe. Okay? And so we count. And I don't know if we start with number 1 or we wait till we get to number 10. But let's just start with number 10. So we go 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. 10, that one passes the rod, that one goes to God. 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, number 20, that one goes to God. If number 20 comes crawling in on two legs and one eyeball is bulging and it's about tipped over and it's half dead, it still belongs to God. That's what he said. It's the tithe. If it's on its last leg, it's the tenth, it's mine. If it's the best one, and you go, ooh, the best one, I don't want the best one. I want to move this best one and get the three-legged one up there. And God says, then both of those belong to me. Now, I'm calling it mechanical, folks. That's a little bit of an insult to the text. When it came to offering something like the Passover, you didn't have that liberty, right? You didn't have the liberty to go to the herd and go, boy, that one has been around forever and she no longer produces milk and she's about half dead and this is probably her last season and so I'm going to give that one to God. You couldn't do that. That one had to be the best. But when it came to the tithe, whatever was number 10 was number 10. And that is God's regulation on that. He's after the 10th. So to that extent, it is a little bit more about the quantity of what is offered than it is the quality of the offering. David.
So let's say somebody had, you know, sheep and they had like 5 that year that were born. How would you tithe on 5 sheep?
How would you tithe on 5 sheep? I honestly do not know. I honestly don't know what you would do in that situation. You know, the biblical literature on this is abundant, but the Jewish literature, and not that you don't remember, but, you know, when we get into this, you know, to us, we're looking at Old Testament history, but to a Jew, he's looking at, to him, it's not Old Testament. This is the way to live. And I mean, the Jews write about this, and the rabbis explain this down to a million. So that's a good question, and I don't know the answer. If you only had 5, how do you tithe on a 5? You know, and I mean, the obvious answer is a half a sheep, and nobody wants. I don't think God or man is going to be content with that scenario, you know. All right, I put this slide up here, so let me again, because this isn't in the outline. Let me pause here and try to make a distinction, because I understand the distinction. All that is going on with reference to these offerings is spiritual in the sense that it is rightly relating a man to God. Right? I mean, this is. Okay, I mean, let's just kind of go back and review a little bit of the history, folks, so we don't lose sight of this. Nobody in the Old Testament earned their salvation by obeying the law. And the book of Exodus maps that out, and again, I would point out, it is critically, critically, critically important when you're reading your Bible to remember always that sequence matters. What came first? Right? I mean, this is how God argues when it comes to circumcision and faith. This is how God argues when it comes to male leadership. Right? What's the real difference here? God made man first. So sequence matters. All right, so you go to the book of Exodus, and the very first thing that happens in the book of Exodus is you have a whole passage devoted to God delivering his people from the clutches of Egypt. That is their salvation. Then you have the entire section devoted to the law. How should redeemed people live? How should people who no longer live in Egypt live now that they live with God? And so you then have a temple, a place for these things to transpire. So I understand that all forms of giving are spiritual in that they are in one way or another related to God. I'm just trying to point out what I think is the emphasis here. Okay, the tithe functioned in a material way. I would correlate this to God's concern about loving my neighbor. In other words, what did I do with this tithe? Okay? What did we do with the tithe when we had gathered it? Okay? Well, Numbers 18, 20, and 21, we supported our religious system with it. Now, some prominent people try to make the argument that this is, that the Old Testament tithe functioned as a tax. I personally do not like that expression. I realize that Israel is a theocracy, that it's impossible to separate its civil and its religious institutions. But I just personally think it's horrific to reduce this level of obedience to God to something like paying a tax. But what did we do with this tithe money that came in, with this grain and with these animals that came in? What was their purpose? Well, it supported the Levitical system. Numbers chapter 18, verses 20 and 21. Moreover, I'm reading Leviticus 18 and going, I did something terribly wrong. Let me try Numbers. The Lord spake unto Aaron, thou shalt have no inheritance in their land, neither shalt thou have any part among them. I am thy part and thine inheritance among the children of Israel. And behold, I have given the children of Levi all the tenth in Israel for an inheritance, for their service which they serve, even the service of the tabernacle of the congregation. So we gathered the tithe, and what happened with the tithe? The tithe supported the priests and the entire Levitical system. And I'm looking at the clock, and I want to make sure I give enough time. But 2 Chronicles 31, let's take a minute to look at it. Second Chronicles 31, these are the days of Hezekiah, one of the great kings of Israel. Verse number 4, 2 Chronicles 31, 4. Moreover, he commanded the people that dwelt in Jerusalem to give the portion of the priests and the Levites, that they might be encouraged in the law of the Lord. And as soon as the commandment came abroad, the children of Israel brought in abundance the first fruits of corn, wine, oil, and honey, of all the increase of the field, and the tithe of all things brought they in abundantly. So you could make the argument, and you couldn't fight against it, that the tithe supported the political system of Israel. But I would also argue that Israel didn't really have a political system like we did. They had a religious world. And the tithe is primarily to support Israel's religious institution that governed the people. Then to Deuteronomy chapter 14. And we looked at this verse. Let's read the rest of the passage. We've already looked at verse number 22, but let's start there. Deuteronomy 14:22. Thou shalt truly tithe all the increase of thy seed that the field bringeth forth year by year. There's the faith element. And thou shalt eat before the Lord thy God in the place which he shall choose to place his name there, the tithe of thy corn, of thy wine, of thine oil, and the firstlings of thy herds and of thy flocks, that thou mayest learn to fear the Lord thy God always. And if the way be too long for thee, so that thou art not able to carry it, or the place be too far from thee, which the Lord thy God shall choose to set his name there, when the Lord thy God hath blessed thee, then shalt thou turn it into money, and bind up the money in thine hand, and shalt go into the place which the Lord thy God shall choose, and thou shalt bestow that money for whatsoever thy soul lusteth after, for oxen, or for sheep, or for wine, or for strong drink, or for whatever thy soul desireth, and thou shalt eat there before the Lord thy God, and thou shalt rejoice, thou and thine household. Okay? So now we have a tithe with a different purpose. Okay? Now we have a tithe that we're going to use at festivals. Right? The tithe, all the tithe goes to the Lord, and it supports the ministry of the Levites. And God is going to choose one place, and it's going to be, of course, the temple at the city of Jerusalem. And not everybody's going to live in and around Jerusalem. And there's going to come a time when the tithe is going to be collected. And so your options are to drive your tithe of herds and grain and put them on the saddlebags of your donkey and go to town, or convert it to gold and silver, bring it to town, and there buy the stuff that you want. Time's a festival. At some level, folks, all of this tithe is being consumed by people. The priests are living on it. The Levites are living on it. The people are employing it. You go on to verse number 27. And I told you, this gets very complicated. And I'm not going to stand here and tell you that I understand it all. Okay? If you read some of the rabbinical literature, they kind of divide the tithe out into years 1, 3, and 5, and 2, 4, and 6, and then year 7 is like a sabbatical year, and I mean, it just goes all over the place, and that's why I say, if you think that's something beneficial to us and you want to tackle it, then I will work at it, but my inclination was not for the sake of this study. Verse number 27, "And the Levite that is within thy gates, thou shalt not forsake him, for he hath no part nor inheritance with thee. At the end of 3 years, thou shalt bring forth all the tithe of thine increase the same year, and shall lay it up within thy gates. And the Levite, because he hath no part nor inheritance with thee, and the stranger, and the fatherless, and the widow, which are within thy gates, shall come, and shall eat, and be satisfied, that the Lord thy God may bless thee in all the work of thine hand which thou doest." And I'm just going to go out here and throw this out in there. If the tithe is a tax, and the government's responsibility then, if my responsibility today is to pay my tithe by paying my government taxes, according to Deuteronomy chapter 14, I have no reason to object for the government to take money out of my pocket and give it to somebody else for their use. Because that's exactly what's going on here. The poor, the fatherless, the stranger, which means the alien. You know those immigrants we don't want to have driver's licenses and we don't want to have public services? Well, in the book of Deuteronomy, your tithe went to help them. It was available for them. That's who God is talking about there. And the institution of that seems to be a tithe on every third year, which puts a Jew, if these are three distinct tithes, and almost everybody acknowledges that they are, that the portion that God took from a Jew was at least 23 1/3% of what came to him. But again, the function of all of these things was that they were gathered by the Levites at the place that God chose, and they were consumed by God's people. The priests ate them, the Levite ate them, the people ate them at festivals, the poor and the fatherless and the destitute ate them. This was their purpose. So they were taken by God, given to God, used by men. Offerings functioned in a completely different way. And so, and that's why I have up the word spiritual here. And I don't mean that they're more spiritual than the tithe was in being related to God. I'm talking about in their function. Right? There's a twofold command under the law. Jesus said, I mean, everything hinges on this. Love God, love your neighbor. Okay? We're going to gather money and we're going to love our neighbor financially, and we're going to take offerings and we're going to love God in the expression of those offerings. I'm just going to put them up here for the sake of time. Leviticus chapters 1 through 7 explain these offerings. These are not at all about the tithe. These are all about offerings. There are a variety of offerings. There's the burnt sacrifice. Right? We take an animal and we burn it to nothing. We burn it to ashes. Nobody eats of it. The unclean parts are discarded, and the usable carcass of the animal is taken and it is given to God. How do I give it to God? I burn it to ashes. It has no use to man. Nobody eats of it. Okay? There are meat offerings. Our King James Bible talks about meat offerings. There are meal offerings. There are grain offerings. There are peace offerings. There are sin offerings. Right? I mean, so here's a Jew, and God comes and collects his tithes. Right? And the tithe is really, in many ways, has no respect on how he's living as a Jew. But now he commits a sin. Does that impact his tithe? No, it impacts his offering. He brings now to God a sin offering. Leviticus 5, 1 through 6 deal with trespass offerings. So there's all of these offerings. And in the Old Testament economy, under the law, everybody was expected to participate in both ways. Everybody tithed. And everybody was expected to participate in the offering sense. In other words, there was no distinction. Nobody could say, I've tithed, I've discharged all of my obligation to God. And nobody could say, I don't know why I need to tithe. I'm bringing peace offerings and burnt offerings and free will offerings and trespass offerings to God. It was a two-pronged element. Everybody was expected to do this. Leviticus 14:21. All right, Leviticus 27, the tithe is irrespective of your wealth. Everybody paid it. Now, and I'm just kind of jumping into the middle of the stream. Well, let's go back to verse number 20. And the priest shall offer the burnt offering and the meat offering upon the altar, and the priest shall make an atonement for him, and he shall be clean. And if he be poor and cannot get so much, then he shall take one lamb for a trespass offering to be waived, to make an atonement for him, and one-tenth deal of fine flour mingled with oil for a meat offering and a log of oil, and two turtle doves or two young pigeons, such as he is able to get, and the one shall be a sin offering and the other a burnt offering. And this is a passage, by the way, that helps us understand that Joseph and Mary were very poor, because that's what they brought, were two turtle doves. They brought what the poor people brought. But everybody brought. Everybody was a sinner. Everybody was a member of the covenant community. Everybody was supposed to have faith in God. Everybody was supposed to submit in obedience. The only thing that changed was the quantity, so to speak, the value of the gift itself. And this is why that in Malachi 3, verses 8 through 12, when God is chastising the nation, he says that they have robbed him in tithes and offerings. See, we could understand if God said, you've robbed me in tithes, you owe me the tithe. How have I robbed you in offerings? because I owed you the offering. Because for an Old Testament Jew to never bring an offering to God was for an Old Testament Jew to make the declaration that every moment of every day he was totally right with God. And in fact, in Numbers chapter 18, verse number 6, the entire tribe of Levi was a gift to God. It was his tithe. Right? God got his tithe off of everything, even the people. Even of the people in the land, God's going to collect a tithe of them. How are you going to do that? I'm going to take the tribe of Levi. And even in the Old Testament, folks, it is a matter of faith and heart. 2 Samuel chapter 24. So this comes after David has committed the sin of numbering the people and God has visited them with judgment. I'm going to start in verse number 18. I got verse number 21 on the slide, but okay. 2 Samuel 24 and verse number 18. And Gad came that day to David and said unto him, go up. Rear an altar unto the Lord in the threshing floor of Araunah the Jebusite. And David, according to the saying of Gad, went up as the Lord commanded. And Araunah looked and saw the king and his servants coming on toward him. And Araunah went out and bowed himself before the king on his face upon the ground. And Araunah said, wherefore is my lord the king come to his servant? And David said, to buy the threshing floor of thee, to build an altar unto the Lord, that the plague may be stayed from the people. And Araunah said unto David, let my lord the king take and offer up what seemeth good unto him. Behold, here be oxen for burnt sacrifice, threshing instruments, and other instruments of oxen for wood. All these things did Araunah, as a king, give unto the king. And Araunah said unto the king, the Lord thy God accept thee. And the king said unto Araunah, nay, but I will surely buy it of thee at a price. Neither will I offer burnt offerings unto the Lord my God of that which cost me nothing. So David bought the threshing floor and the oxen for 50 shekels of silver. And David built there an altar unto the Lord and offered burnt offerings and peace offerings. So the Lord was entreated for the land, and the plague was stayed from Israel. So here is the king that, of course, is the king after God's heart. And this is, I think, a reflection of that. David had no interest in exercising a cheap faith. Right? God has commanded him, okay, build an altar, offer sacrifices. David goes out, says, this is the place I want to do it. And the man says, here, take everything that's at your disposal. David said, I can't ever do that. I can't make an offering to God if I have nothing invested in it. Didn't cost me anything. That's not an offering to God. And so that is the position of his heart. Even in the Old Testament, folks, I would argue that faith and heart are important concepts. Okay, that's what I got this morning. Questions, comments?